Good morning. This is Henry Cassidy in the NBC newsroom in New York with the World News Roundup, transcribed and direct. Major developments and on-the-spot coverage by correspondents at the scene this Thursday, June 2nd.
Around the clock, around the world, Monitor takes you everywhere. Monitor, NBC's new weekend radio service that covers the world, harvesting the very finest in entertainment and bringing you anything that's exciting or important. From a 10-minute visit with George Gobel to a 2-hour Broadway musical uninterrupted, Monitor will have it. Just wait until you hear Monitor, the first broadcast Sunday, June 12th. That's Sunday, June 12th on NBC. Now here's the World News Roundup.
The 4 American flyers released by the Chinese communists have told some of the story of their 2 years in prison. They held a news conference last night in Honolulu while waiting for members of their families to join them there. They avoided questions as to whether they signed any confessions, but they made it clear they resisted successfully communist attempts at brainwashing. All 4 of them did plead guilty to the comparatively innocuous communist charge of intruding over China at the trial that led to their conviction and so-called deportation. They said they wanted to see their lawyers before answering any questions about confessions. They seemed to be cautious, both for themselves and for the other Americans still being held in communist China. Several American prisoners of war have been court-martialed in this country after being released by the Chinese. But the account of the 4 flyers seems to be all to their credit. And today they get one of their rewards. They will see their families for the first time in more than 2 years when an Air Force plane arrives at Hickam Field this afternoon, bringing the relatives free of charge for a 5-day reunion with the flyers. Then Captain Harold Fisher, Colonel Edwin Heller, Lieutenant Lyle Cameron, and Lieutenant Roland Parks will fly back to their homes. As another reward, they have anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 in back pay waiting for them when they get here. But first, let's hear from the flyers themselves at station KGU Honolulu with John J. Jordan.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're at Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu, Hawaii, the paradise of the Pacific. Standing here before me are 4
very, very happy young men.
First, of course, in order of rank, if we might do it that way, is Lieutenant Colonel Heller. Colonel Heller, would you tell us first where you're from and what you think about being back here in the United States of America?
I'm from Wynwood, Pennsylvania, and I'm doggone glad to be back here. Lieutenant Parks from Omaha, Nebraska.
From Omaha, Nebraska. Where'd you go to school in Omaha, by the way?
Well, I went to Central High School and then to the university for 2 years there.
Uh-huh. And how much money have you got coming to you?
My numbers, it's $13,900, but that's too much to even think what to do with.
Have you had a heart-to-heart talk with the finance officer yet?
I haven't even seen him yet.
Let's see, you're a double jet ace, if my memory is correct. And you are Captain Fisher from Sway City, Iowa.
Right.
Harold Fisher, Jr.
That is correct.
Right. How do you feel about being back, Captain?
Well, you just can't say it and really mean it. You can't really explain how you feel. It's too wonderful. It's too great.
This is Lyle Cameron from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Ladies and gentlemen, direct from Hickam Field, just outside the beautiful city of Honolulu, Hawaii, you've just heard the voices of 4 very happy, very grateful young men. 4 airmen who have been freed from their communist Chinese captors. They were Lieutenant Colonel Edwin Heller of Wynwood, Pennsylvania, Captain Harold Fisher of Sway City, Iowa, First Lieutenant Roland Parks of Omaha, Nebraska, and First Lieutenant Lyle Cameron of Lincoln, Nebraska. This is John J. Jordan in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Now that the 4 flyers are safe and free, the United States government and the United Nations have renewed their efforts to obtain freedom for the other American prisoners in China. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Doug Hammarskjöld, has been following up on his latest message to Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai. And the State Department has disclosed new American discussions with the Chinese in the neutral city of Geneva, Switzerland. For that story, we go now to Washington and NBC correspondent Leif Eid.
It involves allowing the Chinese communists to save face, but there is a formula that our State Department people think will bring the release of all Americans still being held in Red China. It's being talked over now in the only direct diplomatic contact we have with Red China, the consuls generals of the 2 governments at Geneva. The formula has been laid down pretty much by the Red Chinese themselves. One part is that Red China would consider early release of prisoners with good records. The other part, put over Beijing Radio, on the release of the four fighter pilots is that the prisoners have been treated with leniency because they were only carrying out orders and admitted their crimes and expressed remorse. This could fit the case of the 11 B-29 crewmen and presumably most of the others, too. The Consul General Gowan is presenting our demand for their release against this background. One thing remains for this country to do. Joe Enlai had told Krishna Menon that only a few prisoners were being released because we're still holding some Chinese students who want to go home. The State Department says that the last of those who want to go back is now free to do it. It's a matter of convincing the Red Chinese. This is Leif Eid in Washington.
In New York this morning, Adlai Stevenson is speaking at the dedication of a new medical science building of the New York University Bellevue Medical Center. The text of his address has just been released, and in it he criticizes the Eisenhower administration for its handling of the polio vaccination program and for what he calls its failure to provide adequate funds for medical research. Stevenson says he had not thought to enter the vaccine controversy, but he apparently felt compelled to answer the administration contention that no one could foresee the extent of the demand for the Salk vaccine. If anything were predictable in our uncertain world, he says, it was the immense and imperative demand for the vaccine. On the constructive side, he says the federal government should help to subsidize worthy private health insurance programs, increase its aid to medical research, and provide assistance to medical schools. The polio vaccination program appears to be getting back into full swing. Release of 200,000 doses for immediate use was announced last night. The flow of the vaccine is now expected to increase quickly, and the Public Health Service anticipates enough shots in the next 30 days to inoculate all children in the first and second grades. Abroad, the railroad strike in Great Britain has entered its fifth day with no signs of a break. Prime Minister Sir Anthony Eden has called his first cabinet meeting since being re-elected last week to consider government action. In Yugoslavia, the visit of Soviet leaders to Marshal Tito seems to be drawing to a close, with results that remain to be seen. For the story, we go to Belgrade and NBC correspondent Jack Vergon.
A weary, travel-worn Soviet delegation arrived in Belgrade this morning from a whirlwind tour of Yugoslav industrial plants loaded with American machine tools to begin the final day of talks with Marshal Tito. The finished draft of a declaration on conference results is awaiting official approval before publication tonight. But informed sources here reveal today that the document will contain only vague generalities concerning Soviet-Yugoslav relations, active coexistence, whatever that means, and the preservation of peace. Unsolved questions will be discussed at a future date. And among the unsettled questions are Marshal Tito's demands for nearly $500 million damages caused by the Cominform trade blockade and the Yugoslav request that the Cominform be dissolved. Tonight, the Russians are throwing an elaborate farewell party. A ballet troupe, opera singers, and Cossack dancers have been flown in from Moscow for the occasion, along with two plane loads of caviar, Russian champagne, and vodka. The Soviet delegation have been good, hard-working tourists and seem to have enjoyed Yugoslav hospitality, even though the atmosphere has been chilly at times and very little has been accomplished at this conference. This is Jack Vigon in Belgrade.
More news in a moment. Now, this announcement.
Hello, this is Herb Schreiner. You know, we had a fellow back home that I went to school with and later discovered oil on his property. He used to say that if you watch the dollars, the pennies will take care of themselves. Well, I wouldn't want to argue with a millionaire, but I'd say that saving your dollars is even more important than watching them. When you save them in United States Savings Bond, you don't even have to watch. They just start right in earning good interest for you. And when the bonds mature, 9 years and 8 months from now, they pay off $4 for every three you've put in, and even more if you want to leave them in longer. In the meantime, if you're ever in a pinch, you need some cash, these bonds can be redeemed right off at the bank. And remember, there's no safer place in the world for your money. So folks, let me suggest that you save the sure way with United States Savings Bonds. Buy them through the payroll savings plan where you work, or you can get them through the bond a month plan where you bank. Believe me, there's no finer investment in the whole world than United States Savings Bonds.
Now back to Henry Cassidy in New York.
In Detroit, negotiations have been resumed between the Ford Motor Company and the CIO United Auto Workers for a new contract. The old contract was supposed to expire at midnight last night, making a strike possible, but the union extended the contract until Monday to consider a new proposal from Ford. In Metuchen, New Jersey, it's reported workers at the Mercury Assembly Plant have gone on strike. A Ford official says 30 maintenance men walked out early this morning and set up a picket line. Management calls it a wildcat walkout. Dallas, Texas, at least 3 persons were killed and 8 injured last night when a downtown building collapsed, crushing a next-door lower building. A vacant three-story structure in the process of being torn down fell on a one-story music store and cafe. Rescue workers are digging through the wreckage looking for other possible victims. One of the most dangerous of sports is mountain climbing, but there are reports this morning of two thrilling and successful exploits in this field. For the story, here is Irving R. Levine.
Two tough Himalayan mountains apparently have been conquered. The most difficult peak, also the most tricky to pronounce, Kangchenjunga, is only 800 feet lower than Mount Everest and lies on the border of India and Nepal. It's the third highest mountain in the world. Mount Kangchenjunga, which has claimed more lives than any other of the Himalayas, was the world's highest unconquered peak. It's now reported conquered by a British expedition commanded by Dr. Charles Evans, who was a member of the group that sent two men to the summit of Everest. The other Himalayan peak just conquered has no name and is only 22,000 feet high compared to Kangchenjunga's 28,000 feet. But it has been climbed by members of an expedition consisting entirely of women. They are members of a Scottish mountain club, and one of the climbers, 34-year-old Mrs. Monica Jackson, is the mother of two children. Hardy souls, these Scots. This is Irving R. Levine.
From the field of sports, let's turn now to industry and an interesting new development there with W.W. Chaplin.
Glass used to be considered the most fragile of materials, but now it's tougher than wood, tougher than steel, and it's moving into American industry in a big way. The Wall Street Journal says glass fiber will probably sell to the tune of $200 million this year. And where do you suppose it's being used already? Well, just for a sampling, insulation, car bodies, swimming pools, golf clubs, fishing rods, archery bows, and airplanes. Oh, and Goodyear is making boats of this stuff. You want a do-it-yourself lesson? Okay, melt some glass in a vat that has tiny holes at the bottom, and when the molten glass runs through the holes in threads, wind it up on a spool. Of course, that's just lesson one. You do other things later. Anyway, fiberglass is on the multi-million dollar go, and chances are 10 years from now, you can live in a glass house and throw all the stones you like. This is W.W. Chapman.
And this is Henry Cassidy. I'll be back in a minute with the rest of the news.
The simple statistic that 340,000 homes were destroyed by fire last year and that there were $700 million worth of damage done may mean little to you, but let's stop to think for a moment how you would feel if that statistic included your home. It would mean, first of all, that you had lost thousands of dollars worth of property. It would mean the loss of your home. It would mean that all of your possessions, including clothing and furniture, had disintegrated into smoke. Now, if you were lucky, your family would have escaped unharmed, but all too often at least one member of your family would have been injured in some way. So guard against fire in your home. Follow these simple rules. Don't smoke in bed. Dispose of all old newspapers and rags. Have a licensed electrician repair defective electrical equipment and wiring. Keep matches away from children. And use a cleaning fluid that won't burn. Don't gamble with fire. The odds are against you. Now back to the World News Roundup.
There has been some controversy over the use of confidential informers to combat crime and subversion. This system has come in for criticism, especially after the activities of some former communists who have testified against others and then denied their own testimony. Today, J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI, has stepped into the controversy with an editorial in the FBI's Law Enforcement Bulletin. He says there can be no doubt the use of informants in law enforcement is justified. Public interest demands protection of their confidence. That's World News Roundup, produced by NBC News. Henry Cassidy saying goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Enjoy 5 minutes with Mary Margaret McBride today over most NBC radio stations.